Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast, Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
A new study links helicopter parenting to behavioral issues with children later in life. It's definitely not the first one. There's a lot of evidence that hovering over our kids and stepping in as soon as they face any difficulty has an adverse effect on them down the road. But from judgmental peers on social media and elsewhere to rigid structures in school and daycare, all the way up to the law itself, it's never been harder to raise an independent child. If science says our kids need more freedom, more chances to try and fail, why the hell are we pushing parents in the other direction? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
It's not a reason to start putting GPS tracking devices on their shoelaces. It's not a reason to do all these things where we are watching their every moment, because that is taken away from their childhood and detracting from their development.
Aaron Hutchins is a reporter at Maclean's who spent most of his spring trying to answer this question. How did good parenting become a crime? Hey, Aaron.
Hey.
So, what is a helicopter parent?
A helicopter parent is someone who really hovers closely over their child, making sure they don't fall, making sure that they are doing all their homework, who really stays close by, almost too close by to some degree, to make sure that they are advancing to the liking of the parent, I suppose.
And when we look at studies like this and you ask questions like, how did good parenting become a crime? Give me an example of the kind of thing we're talking about.
One example that was really widely spread, Adrian Crook, who was the bus dad, I think he runs a blog called Five Kids, One Condo, and he's a single dad who has five kids. He realized that having so many children for yourself and trying to get them all to school would be a challenge in itself, especially in Vancouver, where he's from. So what he did was he slowly, methodically taught his kids how to ride public transit by themselves. He went with them on the bus trips to school. There was a transfer. Eventually, he taught them what to do, taught them safety, what to do if strangers talked to them, what to do with basically all the safety stuff that you would have. And he made sure that the eldest could, you know, there's five of them, make sure they're all together, all these things.
Right, coordinated parenting effort.
Yeah, and eventually he learned to take the first bus trip with them, and then for the transfer, he'd let them get in the transfer by themselves, and they would go. And then this is not a one-day thing. He slowly, and then over the course of a year, even longer, said, okay, my children have proven themselves to be able to handle this by themselves. Starting to ride the bus from home to school all by themselves. And this went on without incident for a while until one day a local saw these kids on the bus by themselves without an adult supervision. And they weren't taken over the bus. They were well behaved by all accounts, but someone saw them on their own and decided to call child services saying, this is not right. And then he was paid a visit by child services, and now he is under these very strict regulations where he can't leave them alone for even a moment. When you have five kids in one condo, that's rather difficult because one kid wants to go to the corner store. And going to the corner store is quintessential childhood stuff. He can't go with all five. That's too much to wrangle all five kids to go to the corner store. He can't go by himself because he can't leave five kids alone in his condo because he's afraid he'll lose them at this point. And he can't send one or two because equally, kids alone.
So when someone sees a bunch of kids on the bus by themselves and they make a call to child services, what happens next?
Well, child services obviously has to do something about it. And I don't want to put any serious blame on child services here, because whenever they have any call, like they should be investigating this. You can't say this doesn't sound bad. They should at least look into this. And as you might know, like just being a parent, you kind of question every decision you make and you think it's right. And it may be not what your parents did with you, but you're saying, this is what I'm going to do. And when that happens, when someone knocks on your door, even if you know what you're doing is right, you start to second guess many things because you're thinking, oh my goodness, child services, could they find something to actually take my kids away?
In Canada, what kind of laws are in place, especially federally? Is there kind of a network or a framework of what we can and can't let our children do as they grow up?
It really depends on where you live. There was a report in 2015 that just found that there was a serious kind of lack on guidelines that are consistent for the entire country. And when you think about kids being left home alone, everyone's like, oh, don't leave your kids home alone. There's actually only three provinces that actually have legislation for this, and that's Manitoba, New Brunswick, and Ontario. And even them, so New Brunswick and Manitoba, if your child is under 12, they can't be left unattended without making provisions, is what it says. And I don't know what that means. Like
a neighbor watching.
A neighbor, here's a phone. Like that's kind of, similar to Ontario, the age limit is 16, which seems kind of weird to think a 15-year-old is not allowed to be home by themselves. That's kind of the legislation. And then with children's aid societies, from talking with some family lawyers, is that they are very reluctant to set an age. And same with the courts. They don't want to say this is the age because they recognize as, and rightly to extent, that children mature at different ages. You would have a very mature 12-year-old. You can have a very immature 12-year-old. It really depends. But what that means is as society has gotten a bit more worried for kids, a bit more helicopter parenting, is what I understand is whenever judges are given the discretion, whenever these go to court cases, is that age that is never set in stone just seems to slowly be going up. It's a couple decades ago, it's like, oh, the child was 12 and alone, that's fine. Now it's like, oh, 12, that's maybe not too much. That age of when people start to raise their eyebrow of a kid being home alone, that age is starting to go up a bit.
But the study we're talking about today and several other studies that have come before for kids with anxiety and kids in other situations all tend to show that hovering over kids and making sure they're supervised every minute of the day isn't good for them.
No.
So why are we pushing in the opposite direction?
Fear. We're afraid that something is going to happen to our kids. On a very simple level, is we're afraid our kids are going to hurt. We're afraid our kids are going to get kidnapped. We're afraid our kids are going to get hit by a car. So fear is the very first thing of why we hover over our kids at the park. On a second level, we want our kids to get ahead. We know how tough it is to get to university, how tough it is to get a job now. We read about millennials or, you know, this next generation of graduates. If you're not getting 95%, you're not getting to university. You're not going to get a good job. And these parents recognize that they can't just go through high school like they may have 20, 30, 40 years ago where they just go through, get a 70 average, get to university, find a decent job in town. That's not how the world works anymore. So globalism and capitalism means that these parents know that their kid has to be at the top level, which means they are the ones looking over their homework, looking over their playtime, looking over every single thing they do to make sure that they are advancing their career. 7-year-olds advancing their career so that they are at the top of grade 2, at the top of grade 4, at the top of grade 11, so that way they get into the university.
So fear first.
I would say fear first, the most primitive.
You looked into how warranted those fears are.
Yeah, they're not.
They're not at all.
Yeah, it's the world is a pretty safe place.
Is it safer than when we were kids?
Yeah, statistically, definitely. There was one historian I spoke with, and she said the real change was the dawn of 24-hour news.
Ready, camera 3, one center up.
Good evening, I'm David Walker.
And I'm Lois Hart. Now here's the news. President Carter has arrived in
CNN,
Indiana,
which was late 70s, I believe, maybe early 80s. But once you had that 24-hour news that was national news, it really brought things home like child kidnappings. That was really what did it. And there's many examples in America of there was one child who was abducted and the whole country freaks out. And these are beyond it. These are tragedies. But you have one example and it will take up the national news conversation for an entire week or 2 weeks, however long this child is missing, or if they are, you know, God forbid, never found again. That is what parents see on TV. It's what they hear on the radio. And they believe because of this one example, they think, oh my goodness, this could happen to my kid. Statistically, child kidnappings are down. Abductions are down. Children who die after being kidnapped is down. Like these things are all getting safer. But because media has grown to 24-hour news, it has amplified these tragedies. Statistics aren't going to make any parent feel better for when this happens to them. If you say, listen, this was a 1 in a billion chance compared to 1 in a million you're a kid, they won't care.
Yeah. It's all, it could happen to me.
It could happen to anybody. And that's where the fear comes. It could happen to you. Odds are it won't. And odds are getting better that it won't happen to you or to me. But when you see the one happen, it guts you.
But it's not a reason to start putting GPS tracking devices on their shoelaces. It's not a reason to do all these things where we are watching their every moment, because that is taken away from their childhood and detracting from their development.
Well, what are the long-term effects of kids who experience helicopter parenting and this kind of never being alone?
The thing about helicopter parenting is these parents, they're trying to do their best. They are invested. They are putting in more than what their parents may have done before. But the problem is, by trying to overstep, or not overstep, but do more than what their parents may have done, by not allow their kids to fall, to make mistakes. If you don't allow your kids to make mistakes, you are not letting them solve their own problems. If they're having trouble with math and you say, this is the answer here and here's how you do it, then they never actually learn how to figure out the math problem for themselves. If they never learn difficulty, they never learn how to be resilient. If they have it easy because their parents are always trying to make things easy for them to push them ahead of the other kids, then they themselves never learn how to deal with adversity.
Aaron, you're a dad. I am a dad too. Both our kids are pretty young. How hard is it personally for you not to interfere when you see something bad about to happen or your daughter about to hurt herself?
Recently, I was making pasta and I just had hot water boiling. And we have a little tower that she can climb to be up at the same level as us. She's trying to touch the pot and I keep on hitting her hand away. I'm like, it's hot. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it for the entire time I'm cooking. Eventually, she gets her finger close and I'm just like, it's going to burn you. Just so you know. And she's two. She understands what hot and cold is. I'm like, it's hot. It's going to hurt. She understands that. She touches it. She goes, ow, hot. And I'm like, yeah, but I told you. I could have easily picked her up, pulled her away, held her down, kept her away from this tower where she couldn't do it. But maybe it's trial and error. She learned not to do it again. Maybe that's terrible parenting. Maybe that's good parenting. I don't know. She learned pretty quickly. And it wasn't that bad. It was like a little, for those listeners, like a little finger, like barely.
Is there any answer for how we can collectively change this opinion? Because the more studies that come out, the more research is done, it seems we really should be taking them seriously. But it doesn't seem like we're actually loosening our grip. It kind of seems like, if anything, we're tightening it. How do we get that message out?
I think the simplest way for me to do this is, I always say parents should, you know, be the parents. If a parent really wants to be a helicopter parent or relaxed, I'm not going to be the one to judge their style, so long as the kid is not in danger, is safe. I will not judge anyone's parenting. I think one way to maybe help showcase this on a very micro level is when I take Ivy to the park and I see other parents with their two-year-olds and they're, you know, right there along the kid and going down the slide with their kid and helping. I sit on the bench, and I don't do that as a lazy parent. I'm not on my phone ignoring her. I'm watching, but I'm watching from a distance, and sometimes I hope that they'll just see my two-year-old go down this big slide all by herself that the four-year-old might be afraid of because she's always been held by her dad. And then you see a two-year-old just running up and down the, you know, the stairs by herself, go up the slide by herself, try and grab the monkey bars and realize that she's actually not strong enough to hold it and just not do it. And I think if people see that these kids are running around having fun, growing at a pace that we as parents like to see our kids grow and are happy, then they'll probably sit back and maybe relax too. To the point that recently I was at the park and my daughter was yelling from this top of this big tower. She was yelling, Daddy, sit down. Please sit down. Like, go back and sit down on the bench, because she's like, didn't want me close by. And I was like, you know what, kid? I'm cool with that. I'm just going to sit back here, sip my coffee, and watch you have fun.
I'm going to remember that over the next months and years. Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks, man.
That was The Big Story. Happy Monday. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and I'm out of here for the rest of this week. We leave you in the hands of some very capable guest hosts, so please tune in and tell your friends, and you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us, please, at thebigstorypodcast.ca and follow us on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.